Oh, I feel for my brother. Feel for my brother.
Hey everyone, it's Mike here, and you're listening to the Psych Mike Show. Alright, today I have the privilege of working with my friend, my mentor, my brother Roy. Thank you very much for being here, sir.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man. I'm so excited to sharing this process with you, man, and I really appreciate you inviting me on your podcast, man. I'm excited about today.
Yeah, man. I mean, today is a different type of episode. We're on episode 2, and we're going to be talking about motivation. So what are the things that keeps you going when you don't feel like finishing that last quarter mile of your workout?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm blessed to be self-motivated, and I think the Army... I'm a 20-year veteran.
Okay, I appreciate that, man.
And so, the Army has definitely instilled in me, just that ability to go to extra mile, even when I'm tired, especially as a leader, mm-hmm. Because, I have to lead by example.
Right.
And so I apply that in my everyday life and everything that I do, and it's really helped me with self-motivation. And so, when that extra mile hits, man, I kind of kick into that fourth gear. And buckle down, and I'm able to get through that process or whatever process may be in my way.
So what are some things? So let's say, like, I need to finish this, because my pops was in the Army too, and when we used to train for sports, he'd be like, this is what we did in the Army to help us keep running, because you're going to run that distance regardless of if you want to do it or not. What actually is going through your mind at that time that motivates you to keep it going?
Sure. I think at the heart of motivation, you're going to find just that initial struggle.
Okay.
And, understanding like where I started, where I came from. I came from poverty. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my motivation, whether it's with a workout, whether it's academic, it all stems from just my humble beginnings. And so I think back to those times when I'm in like those desperate situations to, run that extra mile or go that extra distance. And I utilize that, I utilize that to my ability. It's almost like my secret power.
Okay. Yeah. Like Superman kind of type.
Right. And so that's what I find helpful, man. Just kind of just like remembering those times. Another motivating point is like, my family, it could be financial. And so, a lot of times I utilize those things to kind of help me just keep pushing.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. All right. So I got a couple definitions I want to just go through real quick. Give us a basic introduction of what motivation is when we're talking about dictionary definitions. So the first definition I have here is the reason or reasons one has for acting or behaving in a particular way. And that's one definition of motivation. Another one is that second definition here. Roy, if you want to read that out.
Sure. The second definition is the general desire or willingness of someone to do something.
So really what we're focusing on is the second definition today. So that general desire, willingness of someone to do something. And some synonyms that kind of go with motivation, you may hear initiative, ambition, drive, and determination, all things that we can really interchange and influence what motivates us.
Sure.
So this question, Roy, is directed towards you. Why do you feel like we are motivated by something? What helps us with motivation?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a wonderful question. And I think it's something that I use with a lot of my patients in therapy.
Okay.
I don't call it motivation when I'm in therapy. I call it having an anchor.
Okay.
And what I mean by having an anchor is an anchor is something that helps you through depressed times,
mm-hmm.
Helps you through that to overcome that anxiety. And a lot of times that anchor can be, family. It could be driven by employment.
Mm-hmm.
It can be driven by, the ability to maybe move to the next level. And so I look for that in my patients. I always try to figure out what is it that's going to help them stay motivated enough to do the homework that I want them to do.
Right.
Or to, do the intervention that I'm trying to help them through.
Mm-hmm.
What I've figured out is that you can't find that anchor or that solid motivating factor. It's going to be difficult to get a patient to buy in.
Right. It's hard for someone to find what their kind of purpose is. Like you said, that anchor, that rock, that's something that they can always go to keep them pushing forward.
Sure. And for example, like, let's say I'm dealing with a mother with a single mother with a few children.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go back to those children. I'll go back to how much those children may need her,
mm-hmm.
how much, you know, those children depend on her. And sometimes that can be an anchor.
Yeah.
That's a motivator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's not, but you have to kind of find that in each person that you deal with, especially in a therapeutic setting. Luckily, again, like I said, I'm very self-motivated, so I'm able to find some of those things in myself and what really motivates me.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, if I'm starting a new job and I know it pays well and it's going to be good for my family, well, I'm going to go to work and I'm going to, you know, do the best I can at that job,
uh-huh.
you know, because I want to keep that job for my family.
Exactly.
You know, when I'm at the gym, if I'm working out, you know, I may, you know, feel like my arms are a little small.
Yeah.
I may go extra on the weights.
Okay.
You know, just yeah. to build my arms up. But mm-hmm. It has to be that anchor piece, you know, and I think for us as clinicians, we have to find that in our patients in order to help them, you know, succeed in whatever it is they're trying to accomplish.
And I want to make it clear for everyone that's listening, Roy and myself, we're graduate students. So anytime you hear us talk about anything as far as in schools related, anything we talk about with working with clients, we make sure confidentiality is taken care of. We're not going to use any identifiers or things like that. We also want to make sure no one's taking this as we are professionals, because we are not professionals. We are not licensed. These are just our perspectives on things that we encounter and what we're talking about today.
Absolutely.
Because we don't want to get sued. All right. So jumping back into it, you know, one topic that I wanted to talk about is why we're motivated by something. I had a perspective of, you know, we really gain pleasure out of things that we do. You know, anything that we do is going to create a positive feeling within us.
Sure.
It's going to make us want to do it more. When people have behaviors or actions that hurt or harm themselves, in the general public, myself included, that's considered abnormal. So if we're doing behaviors that are not seen as normal and put into this abnormal category, do you think that's a motivator to kind of steer people to do what is socially acceptable?
Well, I mean, I would challenge you and say, what is normal?
right.
Every day people are defying the odds and doing things that aren't necessarily socially acceptable, and mm-hmm. they're becoming more acceptable these days.
Right.
You know, and so it's really difficult when you throw around the word normal, but in the context that you're using it, if we are, you know, considering what's normal and what's abnormal, as far as motivation is concerned, I just think that, again, people are fueled by what it is that's going to benefit them, or what it is that's going to allow them to get out of a tough situation. And I think you're going to find that regardless of normality, you're going to find that regardless in human beings.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to do what feels good. We're going to do what is going to be beneficial to us. And you know, I think that's just going to be the key to what motivates people.
Would you say people are greedy then?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say people are greedy. I mean, I think there are different levels of motivation. And I think that, you know, we're all driven, like, you know, we're all driven by certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in grad school. I've been in school for about 20 years. So, you know, I have to be driven by something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm greedy for knowledge or greedy for education.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's definitely some benefit to being in grad school, whether mm-hmm. it's financial or whether it's employment or whatever. But I think that, you know, people are just naturally wanting to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, especially in our profession, when people are discouraged or hopeless,
mm-hmm.
which is what we find a lot in our profession,
yeah.
it's because they've given up. And they lack the motivation because they don't know what to anchor themselves on.
And they got to find that anchor to help them steer them back into that motivation. Okay, I've got something in my life that I can pursue. I got something that's pushing me along or saying, hey, this is, of all the dark things that are going on in my life, I got this one bright spot that I can turn towards and continue to move. And that's my motivation. I want to get out this darkness. No matter how bad I'm feeling right now,
mm-hmm.
I got that anchor that I can go towards and use that for motivation.
Exactly. And a lot of times it's hard for people to see that in the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as clinicians, therapists, you know, psychologists, it is our job to kind of help them see that,
yeah.
that little piece of light,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so when you're self-motivated, like we are, because you have to be self-motivated to be in this field.
You got to.
I think it's easy for us. And so we have to like detach ourselves and see from the perspective of our patients and from other people what they may be going through. Because I could tell you right now, it's just like with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. When one of those needs are not met, it causes chaos.
Right.
You know, and you'll see that in a lot of people that you come into contact with. And so it's very difficult. If I lost my job right now and I lost my education and I somehow lost everything, you know, I don't know how I would act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what my motivation would be. I don't know how hopeless I would feel.
Right.
And so we have to look at our patients in that sense. A lot of times their basic needs aren't being met. And so you have to meet those basic needs, which is also a motivator, and then help them and guide them through the light.
All right. Now, another thing I want to talk about, because we're talking about motivation today, is control. So a little background history on something called the locus of control. So there's a study by Professor Claudia M. Mueller at Columbia University in 1998, and she measured students' locus of control. Now, can you explain for us what that locus of control, what that definition really is?
Sure. It's the degree to which you believe you have control over your life. And so how well you're able to manage things around you. And I can tell you right now from an African-American standpoint, especially as a black male in America, sometimes your locus of control is not what it should be, you know, because a lot of our rights, a lot of things that our white counterparts have the privilege to have, we don't necessarily have, or our rights are often violated. And so that locus of control really dims for us, and it's very important for us to find things that we can control that's going to be beneficial in our life.
So that degree in which we're really believing we have control of our own lives kind of dims because of the different cultural and societal factors that are built against black Americans, specifically in America itself.
Absolutely.
And really with the locus of control, there's two types. There's internal and external. So external are those factors that are outside of oneself, and that's what contributes to how your life is run. Those internal ones are factors within oneself and what contributes to how things are going to be run in one's life.
Sure. And that internal piece is a lot of times you can kind of mirror that to self-efficacy.
Okay.
Right.
Tell me a little more about that.
And just, you know, self-efficacy is just that ability to believe that you can do something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then like, so when you have that locus of control, when internally, when you're thinking like, I can't do something or I don't have power over this situation, that affects you. That affects your motivation, that, you know, terribly. And so, you know, a lot of times, especially as an African-American clinician, you know, I feel like my goal is to especially help, you know, my black community understand the power that they do hold.
Yeah.
And a lot of that power comes from education,
you
know, and it's not being utilized by a lot of our black males. And so I think that's a huge goal of ours, is to help males gain that power back through education, help them get that motivation, you know.
And kind of use that external factor to influence that internal. And almost, actually, I just had a midterm today. And one of the things I was studying for when we're talking about social psych is something called the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Sure.
Those beliefs of ourselves, when you're talking about self-efficacy, those beliefs are going to kind of train ourselves into the behaviors that we enact. And we essentially fulfill those beliefs we already set for ourselves. So if I'm a black kid in high school and I'm like, well, I'll probably graduate high school, but I won't go to college. I'll probably just work a meaningless job, this, this, and that. Things that are more not on the high on the achievement scale. With the self-fulfilling prophecy, my behaviors are going to steam myself that way. Why am I going to try hard on this test if I'm just going to graduate and go work a construction job after high school?
Sure.
Why am I going to put in all this effort on the football field when I know only 10% of kids in the United States go to college to play sports?
Sure. And that's also synonymous with self-efficacy.
Right.
And also synonymous with locus of control. I mean, all of it ties into just that internal psyche, man. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I think, especially for a lot of our black youth, we really struggle with that, you know, because of the lack of resources that we have, you know, the opportunities that we have, it's easy to just give up, mm-hmm. you know, especially when you don't have an example, in a familiar sense, of how to accomplish things. Mm-hmm. It can become, you know, a huge part of your lack of motivation. And so it's just important for like brothers like us to give back and to really like really be a voice mm-hmm. for those that, you know, we could possibly motivate out of some of those situations.
Yeah. And I think the biggest part as far as, you know, what kind of motivates me to get through school is just my background and the amount of influence that I've seen, even as a student, just how black kids kind of look up to me and how connected they seem to really connect with some of the things that I talk with and how kids will hold on to every word that you share with them. I think that's another motivator for me, because I can see if I can influence a generation and create an internal locus of control for them that is more positive and fights all these different external locus of controls that are negative for them, they may be able to push themselves further than what they thought they would with that self-efficacy piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, work like this is great. You know, just talking about it and having those discussions is powerful, man. So I definitely applaud you for everything that you're doing.
I appreciate that. I mean, you know, this really, when I got into this, it was actually during COVID, and I was like, oh, I'm bored. I just finished my semester, and it's COVID, and I need to figure out something to do while I'm on my break between starting up classes. And you know, I had an initial idea for a podcast show. It was really just going to be just general topics in general. But I think my love for psychology, and I think my push to relate that to how that can help minority individuals in our country, specifically black people, black males, I think that's what pushes this show out. And some of those topics that'll start coming out in different episodes are going to be geared more towards that. So I appreciate you being on and trying to be a part of what I'm trying to build here.
Sure, sure. Anytime, man. Anytime. You know, I like to get on my soapbox.
There we go. Speaking of soapbox, let us know what's going on in Roy's life right now, grad school-wise.
Sure. So I'm completing my fourth year in grad school clinical psychology. Most of my training has been in neuropsychology.
Okay.
And so I have a huge understanding of, well, let me take that back. I won't say a huge understanding. I'll say I have a good understanding.
He's being very modest, by the way.
I have a good understanding of brain-behavior relationships. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of been my thing.
Okay.
Luckily, I'm going into a forensic setting. I'll be working at the Florida Department of Corrections. And hopefully I'm able to make, you know, some type of impact. Mm-hmm. But I'm going into a more of a forensic setting now. And so I'm anxious to see, you know, what kind of work I'll be able to do there. And so school for me is almost at the end.
Okay.
I'm currently working on my dissertation right now, which is going to be geared more towards understanding stress and cognition in black men.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm super excited about pushing that research out and you know, helping get better representation of black men in research.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm enthusiastic about, you know, this new position as a resident. Ready to see what, you know, the next step is, man.
Yeah, and really, you know, Roy's talking about some different things. Neuropsychology, again, is that understanding of how the brain reacts, how the brain works, and how that creates different behaviors in us. Forensics, people may have thought of like, oh, NCIS, the people that spray the chalk line around people that are dead on CSI and things like that. Yes, but no. When we talk about forensics in the psychology setting, we're talking about in the prison system, in the juvenile justice system. Forensics is, and psychology, forensic psychology, is the link between law and psychology and how the social justice system and those two things intertwine. So I think what Roy may be seeing specifically at the jails, you're probably doing like some assessments of different prisoners that are, and inmates that are there.
Sure.
Some things that I've done in my forensic setting is different competency evaluations of clients. And that's just to see if somebody can withstand trial, if they know the ins and outs of what a criminal case is for, if they hold the mental capacity to be able to do that. And then there's a whole bunch of things that forensics can divvy down to. So it's a really interesting field for those that want to get into psychology and feel like, well, I don't know what I'm interested in. I would say there are a whole bunch of APA divisions. The American Psychological Association. And that association is a professional organization that students and professions alike can be a part of and learn about different areas of psychology. So if you ever want to find information about what things that you are interested in, maybe some different realms of psychology that you've never heard of before, like men's psychology, which I just didn't know about until like a couple months ago. Yeah, look it up. Go to APA.org, and you should be able to see all the different organizations that are on there. Some closing remarks. Really, motivation comes from many places. We gain pleasure out of everything that we do. And even if we perform actions to benefit the lives of others, we want to know that we can control what motivates us and should strive for that internal locus of control. Because no matter what happens outside of us, we can always push ourselves to create that anchor to help us push through. So motivation, when motivation comes from within, we can be dependable, follow through on what we set out to accomplish.
Absolutely.
I always like to end the shows with a call to action. So really, what motivates you? Take 10 minutes out of your week to sit down and figure out, you know, what is something that motivates me. Maybe actually write out a list and how you can apply that motivation list to your life. You know, I want to say thanks for Roy for being here. We really do appreciate you. We're definitely going to have you on a couple more episodes for sure. Roy, where can we find you? Are you on social media, anything like that?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can find me on IG, Mitchellverse. That's MitchellVerse. I also have my own website where I do a little blog. And we talk about different social issues that are really important for the community. And so, you know, I would definitely love for a lot of your followers to, you know, chime in on some of those issues that we talk about on my website. The website is called MitchellVerse.com. Again, that's MitchellVerse.com. On my site, you can also purchase like psychology t-shirts and little, you know, psychology knickknacks or what have you. But yeah, it's a good site. It's where I'm at most of the time. But you could definitely reach me on IG.
All right. Yeah. So you guys, I'm going to put that in all that information in the show notes. Be sure to click the show notes. Visit Mitchellverse, all things that are psychology, run through him. Make sure you guys make your week a good one and don't forget to live. Can you hear me? Life is real, yeah. And if there's a hell